Could
ready
you?
To go? Okay, we're going to get started. This is the May 20th meeting of the Mobile Source Committee of the Bay Area Air Quality Management District. If we can do roll call, please.
On the roll.
Or do I need to say? Do I need to say the authorizing procedures allowing us to do the teleconference, or is that implied?
I think staff says it if it's needed to be said, right? The clerk.
The chair has been reading it, but I can do that if you.
I'll do it. So this meeting will be conducted under the procedures authorized by Executive Order N2920 issued by Governor Gavin Newsom. All right, if you can do your roll call, please.
On the roll for the Mobile Source Committee meeting of May 20th, Director Cutter.
Present.
Director Haggerty.
Here.
Director Hudson.
Here.
Director Niss.
Here.
Director Mitchoff?
Here.
Director Rice?
Here.
Director Wilson? Committee Vice Chair Ju?
Here.
Committee Chair Canepa? And Board Chair Sinks?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Great, thank you. This takes us to the approval of the minutes for April 22nd. 2020.
I'll move.
I'll second.
All right. I heard it's really hard to tell who moves and seconds when everyone talks to each other. Sorry. Who?
Katie Rice.
Moved. Oh, thank you, Director Rice. And I thought I heard Director Niss second also.
You did. Correct.
Wait. It was Cutter.
Oh, sorry. All right. If we can do a roll call in the minutes.
Director Cutter.
Yes.
Director Haggerty.
Yes.
Director Hudson?
Hi.
Director Niss?
Hi.
Sorry, I'm supposed to be repeating your responses. Niss is an aye. Director Mitchoff?
Yes.
Mitchoff is an aye. Director Rice?
Yes.
Rice is an aye. Director Wilson? Who's absent. Direct Committee Vice Chair Ju?
Aye.
Ju is an aye. Committee Chair Canepa? Is absent, and Board Chair Sinks.
Aye.
Sinks is an aye. The motion carries. Thank you.
All right, next item. We have projects and contracts with proposed grant awards over 100,000. Looks like we have Ms. Skolnick.
So this morning, Chair Ju, members of the committee, Karen will give you a presentation on agenda items for board approval with the awards over $100,000. We're particularly pleased to be bringing you this item today because you'll see two major advances in technology represented in the agenda item. You'll see our first deployment of electric tractors, which is something that we're very excited about for the agricultural sector. And there's also a second project to deploy class 8 heavy duty electric trucks encompassed in this agenda item today. So Karen will lead us to the presentation, and we look forward to your questions.
Thanks for that introduction, Damien. Yes, good morning, Vice Chair Ju and members of the Mobile Source Committee. So as Damien mentioned, this first presentation, item number 3, we're gonna be discussing the awards that are proposed for over $100,000. So Marcy, next slide, please. During this presentation, I'm gonna be providing some background on the Air District sources of funding. Also describe the projects that have proposed awards over $100,000. And I'll also be providing some background on the status of the available funding and the progress that we've made this fiscal year with the awards to date. And finally, I'll conclude with staff's recommendations. So next slide, please. So just to start off, I'm gonna be discussing 4 funding sources that the Air District has available that basically follow the Carl Moyer guidelines. Eligible projects under these categories. It's a wide range of projects covering both on and off-road equipment and vehicles such as on-road trucks, buses, school buses, and also off-road equipment such as marine and locomotives. The funding sources here, starting with the one that's listed on the left, include the Carl Moyer Program, which is jointly administered by the California Air Resources Board and local air districts, the Mobile Source Incentive Fund, which is a local funding source derived from DMV fees, and authorizes the air district to collect, again, $2 per registered vehicle in our region. A relatively new funding source called the Community Health Protection Grant Program, which was established in 2017. And this funding, it's currently one of our largest funding sources, and it is intended to help expedite emissions reductions in AB 617 communities. And then lastly, last but not least, the smallest funding source, which is called the Funding Agricultural Replacement Measures for Emissions Reductions, it's quite a mouthful, or FARMER program, which was established in 2018. And so next slide, please, Marcy. So today, for these different funding sources, Marcy, can we move on to the next slide? Thank you. So for these funding sources today, staff is recommending 4 eligible projects that were evaluated under these guidelines for a total proposed award of $1,356,688. Together, these 4 projects will replace 4 marine engines and also demonstrate 7 electric agricultural tractors. So this is the demo project that Damian referenced. Cumulatively, these projects together are estimated to reduce more than 2.7 tons of criteria pollutant emissions per year. Next slide, please. And so also more information about these projects is available in attachment 1, table 1 of the staff report. So moving on to the next funding source, the Transportation Fund for Clean Air. It is the Air District's oldest funding source. It was authorized in 1991 by the California State Legislature. Funding for this also comes from the DMV surcharge. So it's $4 per registered vehicle in our region. And the Air District awards 60% of the funding directly, 2 different ways, either through Air District sponsored programs, for example, the Spare the Air program, and also through a program known as the Regional Fund. The remaining 40% is distributed to the 9 county congestion mitigation agencies in the Bay Area through a program called the County Program Manager Fund. And the TFCA provides funding for a variety of projects that reduce criteria pollutant emissions, but specifically from on-road mobile sources. And really it has 2 different strategies, focusing on vehicle-based projects as well as trip reduction. And in April of 2019, the Board of Directors authorized the allocation of $32 million for this fiscal year, and also authorized the executive officer to execute grant agreements and amendments for projects over $100,000. And then in June, the board approved the regional fund policies and evaluation criteria for the current year. And we'll be discussing more about this process in the next presentation. Next slide, Marcy, thank you. So today staff is recommending a total award of $356,200. In TFCA funds that were evaluated for 2 different projects. One of those is a project that is over $100,000. It's an award of $322,500 in TFCA funds, also for a demonstration project that will test 3 zero emission class 8 trucks. And it's expected to reduce approximately a quarter of a ton of criteria pollutants each year. And more information about this project is also included in attachment 1, table 2 of the staff report. And then staff is also recommending the award of $33,700 in TFCA funds that will be used as match to a project that I'm gonna be discussing here in the next couple slides. So Marcy, can we move on to the next slide, please? Thank you. So the reformulated gas settlement fund, it is, provided from the result of a class action lawsuit that provided approximately $7 million, again, to a program called the Open Grants Program. And it's managed by, again, the Reformulated Gas Settlement Fund. And That funding actually was provided to the Air Districts Foundation. It was an award of $1.3 million that was awarded in 2017 and has been administered by the Air District, who runs the program under contract to the foundation. Let's see. So next slide, please. So today, staff is recommending an award of $67,000 to $67,214 in reformulated gas settlement funds, along with the $33,700 of TFCA funds that I just referenced, as match funding for a project that will install 14 dual port level 2 charging stations and purchase 15 light duty electric vehicles and one electric shuttle. And as part of this project, also, it will be scrapping 7 light duty electric vehicles and 1 heavy duty shuttle. And the project is expected to reduce 0.02 tons of criteria pollutant emissions per year. More information about this project is also available in attachment 1, table 3 of the staff report. Next slide, please. So now taking a step back, just to review the funding that's been awarded to date, including the funds that are proposed for today. About $63 million have been awarded, including the funds that are recommended for award today. That leaves a balance of about $22 million that are available for all different project types and that all areas of the Air District are eligible for. Next slide, please. So in terms of the project categories, we see that the majority of funding has gone to on-road project categories. And again, because our programs operate on a first-come, first-served basis, really that just reflects the demand and interest from potential grantees as they apply for the funds. And also recognizing that this year, a majority of the funds have gone to projects that deploy buses, both school buses and transit buses. And what's really fun about these is that the majority of these buses this year have also been zero emission buses. So that's something that we're making good progress in working towards full zero emission technology. Next slide, please. So this next summary slide shows the progress that the Air District has made in prioritizing funds in areas that have disproportionately higher rates of air pollution. So since July of 2019, the majority of the Air District's funds have been awarded to projects that will provide direct benefits to communities that have been identified, again, as disproportionately having higher rates of air pollution and higher rates of exposure to toxic air contaminants. That said, it also, this map I feel shows and shows the priorities within each community to bring the kinds of projects that are appropriate for each community's priorities as well. Next slide, Marcy. So as I said earlier, the Air District continues to accept applications. This slide shows that we still are accepting applications on a first come first serve basis for basically all of our different programs. So ranging from buses and light duty vehicles, as well as off-road equipment. And also I think yesterday there was a presentation by the Technology Implementation Office. And so the slide also shows funding that's available through that program, through the climate financing program. Okay, and so last slide, please, Marcy. So in conclusion, staff requests that the committee recommend Board of Directors approval for the projects with proposed grant awards of over $100,000 that are shown in attachment 1. And also to authorize the executive officer to enter into all contracts and agreements necessary with applicants for the recommended projects. This concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great, thank you. Oh, I see Chair Canepa back. So, Chair.
Thank you very much, Director Ju. Are there any questions from any of the board members?
Yes, I have a question.
Okay.
Karen, thanks so much for the presentation. I think it's, I'm really excited to see that we've got the demonstration, the tractor projects, and then also the zero emission class 8 trucks. And I, if you could just tell me two questions. One, I'm assuming that these, both the tractors and the class 8 trucks are to the point where they're market viable, maybe not, or maybe they're close to being market viable in terms of cost. And is the demonstration project towards just really seeing how well they do in this environment, or is it towards sharing actually the feasibility of these kinds of vehicles to a broader audience other than the entity that's actually purchasing them? And how do we, and if so, how do we share the fact that these are on the market now, these kinds of vehicles and tractors are on the market?
Yeah, great question. So what's really interesting about these two projects that are funded through very different funding streams, right? They actually have a lot in common in that the equipment that is going to be deployed is not commercially available, actually, maybe is a better way of saying it. These are demonstration projects in the agricultural program. I believe they are commercially available, but it's just in very small quantities. So this is still very early deployment of the equipment. But what's similar about the projects is that they're not going specifically to a dedicated user. They're actually going to be used by a variety of users. So the two projects, that I'll talk maybe first about the farmer project. So it's actually different projects. And in each project, there's more than one participant. So one project has three different farms that will be participating, and the other one has two different farms that are participating. So the idea is that the 7 pieces of equipment for the farmer program are going to be used by in different farms and different case studies so that we can gather information, and that a lot of different ranges of situations can really learn how the equipment operates. And so for the farmer equipment, it's going to be deployed in St. Helena, in Windsor, in Livermore, in Pescadero, and in Napa. I think those are the 5 communities that are going to participate between the two different projects. So again, it's not a traditional program where it's just a one-for-one. It's a project that is intentionally designed so that a lot of different farmers can borrow the equipment and use it and understand how zero-emission technology will work in their environment. Again, the Daimler Freightliner project, that's again, a totally different funding source, a different set of guidelines, but very similar, where it's basically going to be 3 trucks that are not deployed in a dedicated fleet, but rather are provided on a multi-month basis. It's not a day rental, but it's going to be a long-term lease agreement. But the idea is that different users will be able to make use of this equipment so that the point is more for them to learn how the equipment will operate in their fleet and what adjustments they need to do to be ready for when this equipment will be commercialized. And our understanding is that Class 8 trucks, really, they're still very early and likely will not be available commercially, even in very small quantities, until mid to late 2021. I think there had been some hope that they would be available later this year, but with every passing day, we're hearing that maybe there would be some delays in the deployment of this technology. So I think that it is unlikely that we will see Class 8 trucks being readily available commercially before 2021 and likely late 2021. It's kind of a long response to your question, but hopefully I've covered your question.
No, great response to my question, and still really exciting. And I guess my follow-up would be, are the manufacturers of these vehicles involved in the pilot as well? Do they have any role here?
Yeah, so the farmer demo, I don't think I'm quite as familiar with whether the OEM has a role, but it, again, it is designed to be a demonstration project. So I think that the equipment OEM will certainly have a role in making sure that the equipment functions well during the pilot. In the on-road Class 8 project, I would say that the OEM has an extremely strong role in that project. Basically, they're going to be partnering with a leasing company to, again, get the vehicle. It's really the purpose of the project, again, is it's a demonstration so that they can learn how this vehicle will operate in these fleets. So in that case, the OEM has, I would say, the most significant role along with the leasing company. And then the fleets will be participating again so that they can get an early view of how this technology will work in their fleets.
Right. What I would imagine, though, there's no way that they're placing these vehicles into an environment that they don't think they're going to be successful. I mean, they're going to try to optimize, right, the outcome of this. I think that the timing, I almost, if there were a way to even get a little bit more sunshine and noise made around these projects right now, especially here in the Bay Area, because there is this media awareness. In fact, I just heard something on the radio this morning about this recognition that ozone is not down, even though the vehicle miles travels is down. A lot of that's attributed to the heavy duty trucks and the degree to which we can, to make some buzz about this stuff is coming to market can only help, I would think, one, in terms of engaging those manufacturers in terms of building some market demand before they're actually ready to start rolling them off the lines, assuming that they're viable. Anyway, I think it's really exciting and really great that we're doing this. Thanks, Karen.
Yeah, thank you.
Great, thank you very much. Mayor Cutter.
Thank you. I had similar questions on page 6, the $356,200 for the demonstration project. To do this, you're just testing these vehicles in various projects. So how they mark against, like harvesting, or how they, how they do in planting, or whatever the various jobs are on these different farms. That's what you're trying to get a project that is a kind of a full scale, so you see how these vehicles work and everything. Okay, thanks. And then, so it's $356,000 to do that. What do you do with that money?
I think you're referring, the $300,000 is for the Class 8 truck.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, don't have the exact number here in front of me, but I believe that our award represents only about 14% of the total cost of that project. So again, it's a much larger project that actually includes some other vehicles that will also go to Southern California. And it's basically the OEM is producing these, they're a little past prototype. They're sort of like the second beta version of these trucks, if you will, before they are fully commercialized in 2021. And so that's the
$322,000.
Okay. Yeah. With the, in that case, I think that the leasing company has identified some organizations or entities that will actually be sponsoring the trucks, but I'm not sure that that decision has been finalized. Whereas in the farmer program for the seven ag tractors, the electric tractors, those farms have actually been identified. And again, I think to your question and also Director Rice, it really, looking at them both geographically as well as the kind of farms they are, it's a lot of different kind of work that will be done on these different farms. So that the equipment again can be tested in a lot of different environments to see how it does.
Okay, great. And then on page 8, you were talking about replacing some vehicles and so forth. And I thought I heard you say that you are replacing some electric vehicles that are past their prime or whatever we need, as well as one transport. What do you do with those vehicles?
So when vehicles are when we talk about replacing vehicles in programs, generally what we're referring to is that those vehicles will be destroyed. They'll be crushed. In some cases, some, you know, when it's heavy duty equipment, there are some opportunities to take off some pieces of the equipment that can be reused, for example, buckets or loading equipment, but the chassis or the engine itself are destroyed, permanently destroyed, so that older polluting equipment will not be used in our region or anywhere else.
Okay, but you were saying that some of the vehicles we're replacing are already electric vehicles. So we're replacing electric, I misheard that then.
Oh no, and I'm sorry, Marcia.
No, I probably misheard it.
No, no, just, you know, what I think you're picking up on is that for the RFG project, we actually, it's hard to say, it's kind of a mouthful. There's really two different things going on. There's a certain number of vehicles that are actually being replaced, and they are replacing old petroleum combustion vehicles.
30 days, okay.
And then there's other vehicles that are not being replaced. It's an expansion project. So I can't remember if it's 7 or 8 vehicles that are gonna be new that are not replacing anything. But there will be one shuttle and I believe it's 7 vehicles that are being crushed. And then in addition, there's another 8 vehicles that are coming on that are not, they're just adding to the fleet. They're not
great. Great. I just know we are trying to electrify our fleet and so forth, but it is really slow going. And so if you're recycling some electric vehicles, they may be better than some of our other combustion. And so I would just think that we could get into a program, but that's not the case. So thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you. And I will say, it is still too early. I haven't seen, I don't think we're at the point where we're gonna be replacing any electric vehicles for a few years, but there are many used or gently used electric vehicles and the prices is very affordable. So if your jurisdiction is open to buying used vehicles, there is a market where they are very, very affordable.
Okay, thank you. And then when we're talking, my last question, when we're talking about generators, that is more for a stationary source because these are emergency generators. So they are to support a stationary, I'm thinking of our wastewater treatment plant. So this generator, even though it's mobile, is for the purpose of emergency supplies for our stationary wastewater treatment plant. So this has nothing to do with that program of getting those emergency generators replaced.
No, but we actually are, I'm glad you mentioned that, and it's a little too early to announce anything, but I do wanna say that staff is working behind the scenes to see how we can bring in new funding sources and expand the existing guidelines so that generators, both backup, the emergency ones that you're describing, as well as prime ones that are used on an ongoing basis, as well as stationary and portable, so that we could actually start to provide funding for those to make them zero emission or at least much, much cleaner. If not everywhere in the region, at least in our 617 communities. So that's something that we are working on, and we hope that we have a solution for that in 2020.
Okay, well, remember our city because we are a 617 community and we have that need. Thank you so much for your presentation.
All right, wonderful. Are there any other questions from the members? If not, I'll take a motion.
I was hoping to get one question.
Sinks has one.
Okay, Mr. Sinks, Chair Sinks.
Thank you. I was just wondering for these new prototypes, the vehicles that we don't know much about yet that the world's trying to learn about, what sort of data do we get back on these to help us, you know, and other, frankly, other entities, competing entities, determine how effective these are, how far do they travel, you know, how much emission reduction are we actually getting? Is there any electronic tagging or anything else going on for such expensive prototypes as are shown? Let's see. Yeah, particularly on slide 6.
Yeah, absolutely. So these vehicles, in addition to having in their electronic systems a lot of information about how the vehicle's operating. They're also geolocated, so they'll know exactly where the vehicles are traveling, what kind of duty cycle, what kind of payload they have, you know, and also how the vehicle performs as compared to how it's expected, right? So they'll say the vehicle has a range of 100 miles, but if it's fully loaded and it's going uphill at 65 miles per hour, maybe it only has 30% capabilities compared to, you know, what it has on paper. So that's kind of the obvious stuff that they were evaluating. But then,
do we get that data? And if so, how much of that data do we make public in the public's, you know, in the general community's interest of developers of these kinds of vehicles?
Yeah. So imagine that the data comes in like trillions or more than that data points. So we don't actually have access to that raw data. We don't even have a way to really process it. But we get summaries of that information, and we can make that information available to the public. An example of that is we're currently engaged in numerous demo projects. So there's one in partnership with Goodwill Industries, and there's another to deploy electric trucks in that cycle, as well as a hydrogen ferry that's being built. So we participate in this, and the data that we collect through those projects, we make that available, and also we summarize that data and then talk about lessons learned that were not anticipated. So in addition to the obvious, you know, how the vehicle performs, there's a lot of things that are kind of finer points that actually end up making as much of a difference as the battery does in terms of introducing electric vehicles into their new environments, especially when we're about bringing new OEMs on. So the information is available to the public, and we will also be preparing case studies and white papers about all of our demo projects.
I appreciate that. It seems like a fair trade-off if we're providing this kind of funding, getting some good information back to share with the community, right? In other sectors, it's called co-opetition, the idea that we all learn from each other. So putting public money in can have benefits to everybody that's trying to pursue this laudable goal of building EVs for these heavy vehicles. Thank you. Are you looking for a motion, Chair?
Chair, you have to come off mute, please. You're on mute. There you go.
Hashtag fail. So there's a motion by Chair Sinks.
Second
by Hudson. I think we have a roll call, right, Madam Clerk?
Yes.
We need to do a public comment, Chair.
Oh, is there any public comment?
I don't see any from either the Zoom or the email.
Thank you, Vice Chair. We should have kept you as the chair. You were doing a great job. All right, so there's a motion and there's a second. Can we have a roll call, please?
Director Cutter.
Aye.
Cutter is an aye. Director Haggerty.
Yes.
Haggerty is an aye. Director Hudson.
Aye.
Hudson is an aye. Director Niss.
Aye.
Niss is an aye. Director Mitchoff.
Yes.
Mitchoff is an aye. Director Rice.
Yes.
Rice is an aye. Director Wilson, I believe, is absent. Committee Vice Chair Ju.
Aye.
Ju is an aye. Committee Chair Canepa.
Yes.
Canepa is an aye. Board Chair Sinks.
Yes.
Thinks is an aye. The motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Clerk. That brings us to item four, updates to the Transportation Fund for Clean Air, regional fund policies and evaluation criteria for fiscal year ending 2021.
Thank you, Chair Kenneth. Karen Skolnick will be leading us through this presentation this morning. But just as a preface here, annually, we bring you a set of policies that govern how we spend our local TFCA dollars. These policies we take out and we get input from our partners and from the public, and these set our funding priorities and goals for the year. So Karen will take us through the presentation.
Okay, great. Thank you, Damien, and good morning, Chair Canepa and members of the Mobile Source again. So as Damien said, item four are the updates to the fiscal year ending Transportation Fund for Clean Air policies and evaluation criteria. Next slide, please, Marcy. So during this presentation, I'll be providing some very brief background on the funding source, which we just discussed in the prior presentation, discussing the process that we went through to get to this point, and also summarizing the updates that are proposed for 2021 and concluding with staff's recommendations. Next slide, please. So as we discussed earlier, the Transportation Fund for Clean Air, it is the Air District's oldest funding source. It was authorized in 1991. 60% of the funds are administered by the Air District, either as part of Air District-sponsored projects or through a program called the Regional Fund, which is the topic of today's presentation. The other 40%, as I mentioned earlier, they go as pass-through funds to the county congestion management agencies that are authorized in each of the nine counties. So the authorizing legislation for the TFCA does require that the Air District Board of Directors annually must both allocate funding and approve policies for cost-effective and public health benefits. And so on April 15th, a little over a month ago, the Air District's board approved the allocation of TFCA revenue for this next fiscal year. And the rest of this item will be covering the discussion around the proposed updates to the policies that are recommended for next fiscal year. So next slide, please, Marcy. So the policies, actually, they're, as I mentioned, they're updated annually. And essentially, they've been evolving for the last, over 20 years, nearly 30 years now. And so what happens is every year, we are constantly getting feedback from potential applicants and our grantees and other stakeholders on ideas for how the funding could help to benefit air quality improvements throughout the region. But then we also, in addition to that input, we also hold an official public comment period. And this year, the public comment period went from January 15th through February 26th. And during that time, we sent out an email notification to over 2,000 stakeholders. We also held three public webinars where we discussed the current policies, background on the program, and answered any questions about the program. We also held specific meetings with current grantees and also some follow-up meetings with our partners of the County Program Manager Program. By the end of the public comment period, we had received 9 sets of comments. And these comments, along with staff's responses, are included in Attachment C to the staff report. And as I mentioned again, the updates that are proposed, they reflect both the input that we've received over the past year, the input we received during the public comment period. They also include some minor language and grammatical revisions for clarification. And overall, the updates that are recommended are essentially working to provide additional flexibility so that we can continue to get the most cost-effective projects that also reflect the priorities and the changes in technology that have happened over the last year. So with that, we'll go ahead and jump into the proposed updates. Next slide, please, Marcy. So the policies really have two different parts to them. One part has to do with general requirements that are applicable to every project that is funded through the regional fund. And then the later policies, starting with policy number 22, have to do with project category specific requirements. So the first updates that I'll be discussing are two updates that we're proposing for the general policies. So the first is policy 7, which would increase the maximum amount of funding that can be awarded to any particular entity. And part of that is because two things. One is there's more funds that we think will be available in TFCA. So we believe by allowing grantees to have a higher, a larger project, there's some efficiencies that can happen, but also there's plenty of funds for lots of entities to participate in the program. And then similarly, the overall amount of funding that we have in our grants program has really grown since we started back in 1991. And so again, we think by allowing folks to apply for larger projects, it's going to be able to make use of the funds, just create more opportunities with throughout the region. The second is an update to evaluation criteria number 2. And the purpose of this really is to streamline the evaluation criteria so that there's more flexibility so that programs can operate either as first come, first serve or as competitive and perhaps change how they're run throughout the year. So for example, we might open a program as competitive, but if it's not oversubscribed, then it allows staff to have the flexibility to then make it a first come, first serve program. So next slide, please. So now I'm gonna move on to the project specific proposed updates. So the first slide has to do with proposed updates to the policies that are related to clean air vehicles. And these are the policies that are covered, policy number 22 to 27. And this year there's a variety of different updates that really are just helping to provide clarification and more flexibility. So the first changes are for policy 23 and 24. What we are proposing to do is remove from the policies the hard-coded requirement for operational usage. Instead, that'll be evaluated on a case-by-case basis for each project. And then for 23, we're also proposing to remove, it was hard-coded that each project must deploy at least 3 vehicles in order to be eligible. And again, we've seen some situations over the last year where there were projects that were eligible in that category that were able to qualify with just 1 vehicle. So again, staff is proposing to remove that limitation from the policies to just provide more opportunity. And then the last one, the last two is also a clarification. We're looking to adjust the gross vehicle weight rating requirements between policies 23 and 24. So that's the light and heavy duty policies. And then the final change is to add into the regional fund a program that has for the last 10 years been funded as an air district sponsored program, which is the Electric Vehicle Charging Infrastructure Program, otherwise known as CHARGE. And so we're now that we feel that we have a good handle on how that program runs, we are proposing to include that project category into the regional fund. So it doesn't really change the availability of the program or how it will be run. It's just now it's just going to be included in the regional fund. So there's more transparency in the timing of when those policies are adopted. Now they're going to be adopted as part of this process. Next slide, please. And then finally, I'm going to be discussing some proposed updates to the policies that have to do with trip reduction. These are policies 28 through 33. Staff is actually, this is actually a really exciting a new addition for us. This is a new project category that staff is proposing to add, which is policy number 33. It's called Infrastructure Improvements for Trip Reduction. And it's something that's allowed through the legislation, but it hasn't actually been explicitly in the allowed in the policies previously. And this new policy, what it would do is allow projects that basically sponsor by public agencies the installation or building of new infrastructure projects that support trip reduction. So some examples would be building of new ferry terminals, expansion at ferry terminals, or bus rapid transit, bus shelters, things like that. So again, we think that this is a strategic way, since we've identified that there are issues and challenges funding other kinds of trip reduction projects, we think that by focusing on the infrastructure for larger transit operations, that there will be opportunities to provide meaningful amounts of money to projects that are cost effective. So we're really excited about this new project category. And we've gotten a lot of requests for it over the years. The other changes are really just sort of minor updates, but also will provide more flexibility. So staff is proposing for policy number 31 to expand the definition of bicycle parking facilities so that it can include other kinds of bike parking. So in addition to lockers and racks, potentially it could also provide funding for cages or valet parking or other kinds of solutions that are specific, that were not previously called out in the policies. And then the last update is for policy 31 and 32. And what that's seeking to do is clarify and expand the types of plans that would be allowed to be submitted to meet the requirement that these facilities need to be identified in some kind of plan. So again, the legislation requires that bicycle projects be identified in a plan, but the definition that was in the policies before was kind of narrow, and now we're trying to expand it so that it just provides some more flexibility to our applicants. So that concludes the discussion on the updates. So last slide, please. So in conclusion, staff is recommending that the Board of Directors approve the proposed fiscal year ending 2021 Transportation Fund for Clean Air Regional Fund policies and evaluation criteria that are presented in Attachment A. Thank you.
Great, thank you very much. Mr. Hudson.
Yeah, Karen, on page 6, if you can go back, you have updates for every number except 25. What's going on with 25? And can I upgrade a hydrogen refueling station?
So let me scroll down. So policy 25 is hydrogen stations. And if you were to upgrade a hydrogen station so that it expands the capacity or fueling potential of that station, then yes, that would potentially be an eligible project category, and we have, or project type, we have funded expansion of both hydrogen and natural gas stations as an example in the past. If you were to just replace some equipment or make some station.
Yeah. Let me cut to it. Our for the first time that I can remember doing this a while, our transit service is looking at hydrogen buses again. Yeah. The oddity was, is they used our maintenance guy to go to Sacramento to, you know, come out against it, but it is becoming fiscally responsible to look at hydrogen. Well, the hydrogen station in Bishop Ranch would get wiped out in no time with what they have there now. So it would need to do something. I'll just put it at something to expand the capacity. And I'm hearing from you, there's funds that might be available.
Yeah, I would say the Air District has reserved $500,000 for that project category. And actually, this is a quick opportunity to plug a solicitation. And I'm hoping Bishop Ranch is aware of this opportunity, but the California Energy Commission,
they will be shortly,
is offering $50-some million, which includes $5 million of Volkswagen NOx mitigation funds that are being administered by our agency in partnership with the Air Resources Board. So that solicitation closes on the 22nd, so in 2 days. And so if you have any questions, I'm glad to send you a link. And I think the last slide of the prior presentation might have had a link to that solicitation, but if not, I'm happy to follow up with it for you. But that's something that is a much better source of funding. So it can be used for both light duty as well as heavy duty vehicles. Again, it's a solicitation being offered by the California Energy Commission.
So that's on the fueling side, Director Hudson. And then for the buses themselves, they would also be eligible. Provided buses were being scrapped and it's not an expansion fleet, they could be eligible for the Carol Moyer program, which is currently accepting project solicitations as well. So I think it may be worth, if the project is to proceed forward, it might be worth the staff there having a conversation with our grant staff so that we can give them some direction on where the available funding sources might be.
Thank you.
Supervisor Ness. Ms. Ness?
Hi. Asking questions about the electric vehicle charger, and my part of my screen has just gone down. I think it's number 26.
Policy number 26.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So tell us some more. Is this a supercharger? Is this going to be, we are always looking for ways to add more charges.
Wow.
Where we live.
Yeah, absolutely. So you see that the policy is intended to be very, very narrow, just give some brief requirements. The program that is, I'm not sure if it, I think CHARGE is currently accepting applications, but if not, it will be soon. And generally, their main focus, I think, in this next fiscal year will be multifamily dwelling residences, as well as helping to deploy publicly available charging. And to provide charging for folks that participate through the Clean Cars for All program, which is one of the district's equity programs. But to answer your question, yes, it will provide funding to all different kinds of charging. So hypothetically, you could apply for, level one. So just plugging into the wall. So expanding access for low or slower charging that has benefits for when cars are located somewhere for long dwell times, as well as supercharging like you're describing. Very fast charging, this funding is available to help support those efforts. I know many awards have gone to businesses and public agents in Santa Clara County, but we're still open and we'll continue this funding in 2021.
Okay, that, every county has its own, what it's looking for, but that's a particular one in Santa Clara County that, We never hear that there are enough charging stations available, especially superchargers. So thank you very much. We'll keep an eye on it.
Are there additional questions?
Chair Canterbrook, if I can ask a question.
Yes, Mr. Ju.
Ms. Klonick, so I saw it sounds like the majority of kind of the outreach with all the county transportation agencies and the public happened in the first part of the year. And I know we've been kind of having a lot of changes, obviously, with kind of our whole transportation network. We've been having conversations around the board around what are the things we can be doing given this new kind of environment we're in, the decreased kind of transit trips we're seeing. Has there been any kind of connection with the county transportation agencies just on a given everything that we're seeing now, is there something else we can be doing to kind of strategize a little bit better? Are there other policies they might think of now that maybe they weren't thinking of earlier in the year?
So that's a really good question. So I just want to clarify that the public process that was described for this presentation really is focused on the development of the policies for the cycle. It's not representative of all of the communications and outreach that we have with the agencies and stakeholders in general to do what you're talking about, which is you know, what kinds of projects specifically are they interested in, and how are those changing? How are their needs changing, right? So this really, we concluded this process for this year back in February, just because it takes so long to go through legal review and incorporate all of the input, right? So that was on a track before we started the shelter in place. That said, we've had many conversations with the transportation agencies on more recent changes. I don't think that those shifts necessitate changes to the policies. The policies still are broad enough that they can provide a lot of flexibility on what the day-to-day needs are for an applicant. But I think what it will do is it will inform the solicitations that we open. We may continue to do a little bit more public input gathering before we finalize the guidelines, which are usually more prescriptive about you know, what's in and what's out. So before we launch that part, we probably will circle back now that we have, I don't know if we've found our new normal yet, but we certainly are in a different situation than we were 6 months ago when we started this process. So, I mean, I think that's a really fair comment that we get input every day and we have these meetings with our stakeholders every day. We're talking to them about how their projects are going, what kinds of new projects they want to apply for. We're looking at their evaluations and trying to figure out, you know, what things have changed. And they're also coming in and asking for different kinds of, for funding for different kinds of projects than maybe they were previously. So we have a lot of that information. And I think to your point, it will make sense to kind of pause this summer as we work to develop those solicitations for next fiscal year and make sure that those next solicitations again really reflect what we understand today are the needs, even though I expect that they will continue to evolve and change.
Thank you. So you feel confident that at least because they've all, I'm assuming, have gotten a draft copy of the policies we're planning on changing right now, that there's kind of a general agreement, if you will, that the policies are broad enough to your point that as we're going through kind of the specific projects, there's enough flexibility there, kind of given everything we're going through now, to kind of develop some innovative or good projects that might be able to help out.
Yeah, absolutely. The policies, maybe just to clarify, they're really intended to provide sort of that base level, you know, what are the rules around the funding of the program, but they are also broad enough that I've not heard of any project that would be cost effective and provide air quality benefits that wouldn't qualify for the new policies that are proposed, right? So what we've done is we've taken the policies from last year and just essentially made them more flexible and then added some additional opportunities so that there's more opportunities than there were before to make use of these funds.
One thing I'd add to Karen's remarks is that sometimes, very rarely, we do get a project that lies outside of these, and we do bring them to the board of directors for adjustment and then incorporate them in the policies. Those of you who have been on the committee for a while have seen us do that on a very limited number of occasions, but that's kind of, you know, if something really does come out of left field that we haven't thought of before, which could be the case in this situation, we do have a mechanism to bring that back to you as well.
Great, thank you.
Are there any additional questions? All right.
Who's the staff recommendation?
Who has his hand up?
Mr. Chair, we actually have a hand raised from the public. I don't know if it's pertaining to this item. Could we check? It's for Mr. Gladwin D'Souza.
Hey, Gladwin.
Hello, Supervisor Canepa.
Great to hear from you.
Thank you. And members of the Mobility Task Force, commenting on the bicycle parking. Please consider expanding it to micromobility and pedestrian safety. Pedestrian collisions are up. There's an increase in unsafe driving, including a substantial increase in unsafe cornering. In Chico, California, the corner parking spot at an intersection is used for bicycle and micro-mobility parking, that daylights the travel corridor, including the sidewalk. In terms of the item on electric vehicles, please consider that retail is failing in many areas, and so we should rethink where these charging locations should go. And in terms of hydrogen, please rethink, you know, where we can use the money to where it has been working to reduce congestion and improve air quality. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Gladwin, for your comments. And thank you for all you do, not only regionally, but through San Mateo County. You really helped us re-envision how we look at bike paths and so forth. So are there any other comments outside of Gladwin's?
No.
There is none. Can I get a motion to adopt this item, please?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Director Cutter?
Aye.
Cutter is an aye. Director Haggerty?
Yes.
Haggerty is an aye. Director Hudson?
Aye.
Hudson is an aye. Director Niss?
Aye.
Niss is an aye. Director Mitchoff?
Yes.
Mitchoff is an aye. Director Rice?
Yes.
Rice is an aye. Director Wilson, I believe, is absent. Committee Vice Chair Ju?
Aye.
Ju is an aye. Committee Chair Canepa?
Yes.
And Canepa is an aye. And Board Chair Sinks?
Aye.
The ayes have it. Motion carries.
Great. Thank you very much, Madam Clerk. That brings us to item five. Madam Clerk, is there any public comment on non-agenda matters? I don't see any, but I may be wrong.
I don't believe so.
Thank you very much. Item six is committee member comments. Does any of the members have any comments?
How can I make a comment in a hurry?
Ms. Niss?
Yes. How can you tell?
I was reading your mind.
You're mumbling.
So one of the things that almost everyone has noticed and they point it out every day is our sky is now a different color. At some point, could we get some data on that? So, you know, what was it before? What is it now? I don't think there's any mistaking that there really is a very different sort of sense of the outdoors. It just would be fun to hear something about that and talk about, you know, what could or would happen if we actually were cutting down on our vehicle miles traveled and so forth, because the difference is astonishing.
Mr. Broadbent?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Director Niss, I'll be glad to give the board a full briefing on what we're experiencing right now in terms of emission reductions and what the air quality is showing us. I can do that at the at your board meeting on June 3rd.
I don't know about others, but I would really appreciate that. I think this is a chance. It's a great PR opportunity to begin with for the district, but it also is such a great, a bad pun, reflection of what's happening in the environment. And it's intriguing. We can cross streets here easily. I don't have to, you know, there aren't lines of traffic heading for Stanford and so forth. It's a very different situation.
I'll be glad to.
Thanks.
Are there any other board member comments? Jack, I have a question for you. Where are we, you know, there's a lot of cities or counties in particular looking at, you know, people staying at home for working. I think there's, you know, there's been sort of a paradigm shift. You see companies, especially in tech, saying, you know, we can work from home. Tell me a little bit, or maybe next meeting, Damian can provide an update of sort of where we are relative to that conversation and how we're leading. And I don't know, we may be doing it now.
No, Director Canepa, it's a great question. What we've been doing is thinking that we're going to work with both private companies and public to create a pledge by which they might be able to step up and continue to do their remote work efforts moving forward, to really take advantage of the fact that you have such clean conditions, and it is so unprecedented And so we are working on it right now. I know we're also going to be talking to the Community and Public Health Committee about this with kind of some thoughts about how we can really take from this shared experience we're all living through and figure out how we can make it permanent. So as you mentioned, there's a number of companies that are talking about really allowing their employees to work in this remote work situation in a long term. I mean, the announcements from Twitter and others have said they're going to go at least the year, if not longer. So we ourselves are thinking maybe we should really step up and create some type of challenge. And so we're going to do some, we have a presentation with a committee this afternoon, the Community and Public Health. And I'd like to, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, bring it back to the full board with a broader conversation.
Yeah, I think it's important, you know, especially in our areas. I know Mr. Sinks, you know, Highway 101, we're always talking about, you know, how do we ease traffic and congestion? But this seems like, you know, I'm not saying this is the solution, but maybe, you know, maybe helpful in terms of solving the problem on how people commute to work. So.
Chair Canepa?
Yes, Ms. Wright. Yes.
Could I jump in on this conversation real quickly?
Yes.
I suspect that over the next, if they're not already out, there will be state guidelines and or local county guidelines around both how office settings are going to need to operate over the next, you know, 6-12 months, what have you, with regards to trying to maintain some of those the social distancing, et cetera. Similarly, transit is going to have to be adopting protocols that are going to reduce the number of people that can actually probably be riding on our transit vehicles. Anyway, so there's going to be actually, I think, guidelines in place that are going to need to be adhered to that will also support more of a continuation of remote work. And anyway, I expect between now and our next board meeting, we'll start to see that kind of stuff. And it should help inform and support if we do a pledge or anything else.
Excellent. Great. Thank you. Are there any other additional questions or comments from board members? Okay. That brings us to item 7, time and place of the next meeting. It's Wednesday, June 24th.
David, yes. I had my hand raised.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Bad chair.
I just wanted to follow up on these comments. Yes, we've all seen this, and I agree with Katie that the state will be coming out with some guidelines, but we're not going to be able to sustain what it looks like now. I just think it's an opportunity to how do we address it going forward. But I think I'm hoping the message doesn't what am I trying to say? I just think we're not being realistic if we think that there won't be congestion and traffic again at some point, even with all of these other things put in place. As it relates to air quality, obviously any reduction will be great, but I'm not kidding myself that it's going to stay and look as beautiful as it is once, you know, and that could be a year from now. I'm looking forward to what the state will put out because the Twitters and the Googles of the world, as I was talking to somebody the other day, they have the kind of employees doing, this is a personal opinion, the majority of them are doing work that they can work remotely with very limited supervision. But, you know, we're looking at it in Contra Costa County as an employer, how we can do that. But we've had telecommuting, as I'm sure a lot of your agencies have, for years. And it was not as successful from a managerial perspective. And so it's going to depend, I believe, on the type of business and industry that whether telecommuting works well or not. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Dave, could I add one thing to that?
Yes.
I also have heard that, you know, here in the Valley where things are so expensive and so forth for living, that some of the companies have started offering bonuses to people who are willing to leave the Valley because you can get so much more in Austin, Texas than what you can get in Mountain View or Sunnyvale or wherever, which is interesting. If that is a true trend, that too may change what happens in the future. All of us are just second guessing at this point, though, as to what will happen. But I mean, you're right, Karen, I can't imagine it won't all flourish yet again, but maybe not, who knows?
Are there any other committee member comments? All right, so next time and place, as mentioned, is Wednesday, June 24th, 2020 at 11 a.m. Via webcast pursuant to procedures and authorized by Executive Order N29-20 issued by California Governor Gavin Newsom. With that, we'll adjourn this meeting. I wish you a safe and healthy day. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Calvo.
Thanks.
We stay on this if we're on the next committee meeting, correct? We're going to, it's not correct. Another Zoom. Thank you, Jeff.
And then, Jess, we have, we've got a few minutes before that one starts, right?
Look, we have about 11 minutes.
Thank you.